President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, all around the world.
Welcome to Evident Footprints on this September the 8th, 2008. It's so nice to have you with us this evening. We've got a great show planned for you tonight. We're going to get to our guest in a moment here. Just want to thank all the wonderful people who have been sending emails and encouragement for the work that we're doing here at BBS Radio. I get a lot of compliments on all the shows. I don't get to listen to all of them, especially the past 3 months. I try to listen as much as I can. You folks are keeping me apprised of what's going on, and I appreciate that. All the wonderful comments on the guests we've had on the show and the amount of truth that's coming forth. That's what the show is all about, and we are going to continue that theme as long as we have breath in our bodies. Let's put it that way. And we have some interesting things coming up this month, some very exciting guests. Those of you who have gone to my website, directlightproductions.com, may have noticed that there's some openings, and that's because we've got a couple of people that are trying to work out some schedules to make appearances on the show. So I've left those dates open. Those will be filled. And if for some reason they're open, in the end, as you well know, I'll do a monologue and spill my guts. So any way you look at it, we're going to have an interesting topic, from night to night, Monday through Friday. I encourage many of you, or all of you, actually, to listen to, many of the other shows on the network. BBS Radio has increased the archive cost slightly, but you still have available to you all of the shows that are broadcast on the network, and it could be on any of the streams for a nominal, it's really a nominal fee. It's not all that expensive when you consider that you can go into every single show on all the streams and download your favorite show. It's a nice feature to have, and it helps us with the expenses. The bandwidth costs are enormous, especially now on Station 1 that we're broadcasting at 96K. You'll have a very high-quality archive to listen to, and as well as live, and that's our attempt to give you the best programming that one can find on the Internet. Of course, we are dealing with lots of topics throughout the day on all these different shows, and you'll hear a lot of spiritual talk, but you'll also hear some political talk, some things that involve the patriot community, things that involve our everyday lives and our health, especially. And it's important. Now tonight's show, I'm pleased to bring someone two Evident Footprints that has not been on the show before. I was contacted through a mutual friend about a very alarming story that's going on, and this is going on all over the country. And as you will hear tonight, as we're discussing this topic, you're going to hear some names that are right in the forefront, the front lines of this current presidential battle that's going on, which to me is really a farce, because it's more of the same game that's been played over decades and certainly over the past century. And it takes on a new character all the time, but now we have mainstream media ramped up in full propaganda mode. And this story, although it has been covered up, now all of a sudden is sort of creeping through the cracks. Or seeping through the cracks. Say that 10 times real fast. And what I mean by seeping through the cracks is a couple of journalists, nationally known journalists, have taken an interest in this story. The story you are about to hear is multifaceted, and our guest has been victimized by the corrupt machine, particularly in the pharmaceutical industry, but this gets into illegal drug sales on the street. Pharmaceutical drugs that have been sold and are being sold on the street, and to hush it up because of how much money's been made, our guest tonight was falsely charged, set up, and he's going to talk about that, put in prison for 5 years. And he's out, and he's hopping mad. And when you hear this story, I hope it makes you hopping mad, too. It's time we put our foot down and end this insanity that's enveloped our country. With that, I would like to bring to Evident Footprints our special guest this evening, Richard Charles Norton, M.D., Dr. Norton, and if I may call you Rich.
That's fine, Don.
Okay, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Your story is very troubling, not just to me, but I know to other people who have taken an interest in it. And just for the sake of the fact that this is radio and our audience can't really see you and they don't know who you are, if you could give us a bit of your professional background as a lead in to this story, so that we have an understanding of, your medical expertise and your training, your schooling, and how you came to be a part of what we're going to be talking about tonight.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I was board certified in emergency medicine and in family practice. I practiced emergency medicine for 10 years in a small rural community hospital in Lee County, Virginia, where this all the controversy eventually happened. I'd like to say that in 10 years I never had a malpractice suit, which is a pretty unusual situation. In fact, I don't know of any other physician in that situation. I retired out of the emergency room in 1996 and had opened a outpatient rural health care center in Duffield, Virginia, and started to do some primary care. As stated, I was also board certified in family practice. And I was confronted with having to take care of patients with chronic pain management. And a person needs to realize, well, 95% of all physicians do pain management. Only a few people actually are certified in it. There are very few. Back in the 90s, the pain management specialty was fairly new. As an emergency room physician, you essentially may give somebody a shot and a couple of pills and tell them to follow up with their family physicians. Well, when I was confronted with people that had severe back disease and chronic arthritis pain or whatever, I was confronted with reality that the situation pretty much resulted in a bargaining session as far as how much pain medicine, what type of pain medicine you could give them. And suffice it to say, I became a pain management lecturer for Purdue Pharma, the makers of OxyContin, in their Partners Against Pain program. I established the pain management protocols for the state of Virginia. I helped establish the pain management protocols for Purdue Pharma. I became an accomplished lecturer. And I got interested in pain management because when I contacted other physicians as far as what they were doing, I perceived that they really didn't have any protocols themselves. A couple years into that, the hospital that I was affiliated with, my center was affiliated with, my clinic became an outpatient medical center for the Scott County, Virginia, which doesn't actually even have a community hospital. It turned out that I became embroiled in a big controversy around the hospital. They went into a little financial crisis, big financial crisis, actually. You have to remember, communities, small communities, the hospital's often the largest employer. When it has trouble, the whole community has trouble. And during the investigation of that, the prosecutor found out that some pretty big pillars of the community were wheelbarrowing money out the back door, according to his grand jury, including one of the judges, who was a very powerful judge. And we'll get into some of those associations here in just a minute. I'll just briefly recap the situation so people can understand what's happening. And the bottom line is, it turns out that the prosecutor finds out that a judge is wheelbarrowing money out, embezzling money with the 300% medical equipment lease along with the administrator. The administrator of the hospital happened to also be involved in a business association with me. He basically makes the judge's co-defendant my co-defendant, uses what they call a stark anti-kickback law. That would take some time to explain. Anyway, I get found guilty of having violated a Medicare stark anti-kickback statute. I get 5 years. Fairly soon after that, I am able to obtain the documents which show that the prosecutor in fact joined a cover-up scheme by a federal judge to protect that state judge. The federal judge was involved in the case through his partner. They were destroying tapes, etc. I got a taped telephone conversation, which included my co-defendant. Again, my co-defendant was actually the judge's co-defendant stealing that hospital, and he acknowledged what happened, how the prosecutor forced him to say that I had a kickback association in order to get my contracts with the hospital. I was told to lie down or I'd be spending the rest of my life in prison, and I didn't lie down. 6 months after being in prison, they filed a $5.2 billion lawsuit against me in the OxyContin suit. It was one of a few multi-billion dollar OxyContin suits. I eventually prevailed in a $45 million civil suit, which demonstrated that the prosecutor knew I was innocent before he took me to trial. I eventually prevailed in the $5.2 billion suit without one patient claiming that I had misused my privileges, and I developed a new model of addiction which makes it easier to understand and prevent and treat addiction. This story was picked up by several important politicians, including Senator Schumer, Clinton, Biden, Obama, Clyburn, Conyers, Rangel. You might start recognizing these names, who recommended that I go. I was just about the end of my five-year sentence at that time, remember, I'm still serving time despite the fact that I prevailed in a $45 million suit showing that the prosecutor knew I was innocent. They recommended that I go back and attempt to. There's two processes in the resolution. One, that I'd go back and get my case overturned through the House Judiciary Committee. Also, speak to the Senate Judiciary Committee and go back to the prosecutor, obtain money for a foundation for pain management addiction research and treatment based on the new model of addiction. And those things occurred, and it ends up that the people that recommend that I do that end up stealing the money.
Okay, now if I can interrupt for a second here.
Sure, interrupt anytime you want, Don.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt again. How's that? first question, this prosecutor, what is the prosecutor's name?
Tom Bondrant Jr.
Okay, and he is out of what jurisdiction?
The Western District of Virginia.
Okay. Is he still prosecuting cases for the Western District of Virginia?
Oh, yeah. Tom is a very powerful man.
I know it's 1 o'clock in the morning, or you know, on the East Coast right now. Maybe he's home in bed, but
No, he may be listening. If he's not, he can archive this, and he can look up the archives, and I'll be happy to give my telephone number to any of your listeners, and they can call, and I'll answer any question, etc. This has been litigated already. Mm-hmm. What happened is, after I won the $45 million civil suit, you have to remember I'm involved in a $5.2 billion OxyContin suit.
Well, I had one more question. Is the judge still on the bench?
Oh, sure. He's the OxyContin judge, which was also in the $5.2 billion OxyContin suit and in the $634.5 million OxyContin resolution.
Okay, now somebody should tell him it's, what, 1:20 on the East Coast. He should go home and get some rest. He's still on the bench. No, I'm just joking a little. Okay, now sorry for interrupting you. Now, so do you want to clarify now what this $5.2 million suit is and who initiated the suit? Who is the defendant?
Yes, and I'd like to clarify, it was a $5.2 billion.
Oh, I misspoke. Billion. Yes. Yes, I'm aware of that. It's 1:20 in the morning.
And I apologize. In my time, it's 1:20.
Billion.
I think that what I'd like to do before I spend much more time recapping this, if it's okay with you, I'd like to connect this to some current things which are happening, kind of attach this to some current events that people may be aware of. Attorney General Gonzalez, as you know, resigned. He was the Attorney General before the present Attorney General Mukasey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Attorney General Gonzalez was being hammered by the Senate Judiciary Committee for months regarding U.S. attorneys being fired.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue behind that is the executive office interfering in the due process of the court/Department of Justice. And if you recall, if anybody watched the Judiciary Committee's meetings, Gonzalez was fairly flippant. He just kept telling the Senate Judiciary Committees, I don't remember, I don't recall this, I don't recall that. And it was on July 24th, 2007, when Senator Specter confronted Attorney General Gonzalez with the OxyContin fiasco, and he stated, they're dead bodies. And Attorney General Gonzalez all of a sudden bristled and turned red, and he looked at him very sternly. And that was the end of Attorney General Gonzalez. Well, this case is my case. It is the case that Gonzalez was confronted with. And that's what he resigned over, the OxyContin fiasco. The U.S. Attorney Brown Lee, you can Google U.S. Attorney Brown Lee testifies. This was not in C-SPAN covered live, but someone has released it over the last couple months. The fact that a week later, U.S. Attorney Brown Lee of the Western District of Virginia was also hauled up before the Senate Judiciary Committee the first week of August. And he acknowledged that while I was negotiating the $600 million OxyContin resolution, or Purdue Pharma, that Purdue Pharma LP is the company that makes OxyContin. They're located in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Stamford, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
While we were in October 22, 2006, I sent the $600 million fax to Terry Kilgore, a representative of Virginia. His twin brother, Jerry Kilgore, was the attorney general, ran for governor of Virginia against Tim Kaine. I sent a fax to Terry Kilgore. You have access to that. You could post it for your listeners on your site if you'd like to eventually. 3 days later, Deputy Attorney Elston, right under Gonzalez, called U.S. Attorney Brownlee and told him to slow down. This is 2006. Giuliani, who is the counsel for Purdue Pharma, called up U.S. Attorney Brownlee and attempted to intervene. Brownlee was under pressure to try to get this controversy settled before I went back to the Virginia Medical Board in February of 2007. And he wanted to get this resolved because of the whole fiasco involving the hospital case involving Judge Jones,
mm-hmm.
who was also the $5.2 billion OxyContin judge and would eventually be the $634 million OxyContin judge.
Now, if I may interject a question here.
Anytime.
You're speaking about Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of the city of New York during 9/11, right?
And presidential candidate who dropped out because of this particular fiasco.
Okay. He didn't drop out because he wasn't that popular? I don't know. I'm a bit mixed up. You might be very well right. I have to get my political jabs in whenever possible.
Yeah, I understood what you meant.
Now, is this through the I think it's a Dallas firm, is it?
Yeah.
I know it's a Texas law firm that he's a partner in.
Well, he has a few firms. He has Giuliani Partners. I honestly don't know where their home base is. They have Braswell Giuliani, which is a very interesting connection. Braswell Giuliani has a very important figure in this. His name is Mark Mukasey.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Mukasey just happens to be the son of Michael Mukasey, which your listeners may recognize, that is the present U.S. Attorney General, who was introduced to the Senate Judiciary Committee by Senator Charles Schumer. Now, if you recall, Charles Schumer was actually the person that brought my case and my hospital case and the OxyContin case before several members of the Senate and House in October 2004 to the Congressional Black Caucus Assembly in Philadelphia right before the election between John Kerry and President Bush.
Mm-hmm.
John Kerry wanted to obtain the endorsement of the Congressional Black Caucus, also attended by the junior actually, it was Obama. I'm not even certain if he was a senator then. It was also attended by Jim Clyburn. You may recognize that
mm-hmm.
name. Charles Rangel, John Conyers, Hillary Clinton.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, and then these names will all be connected if we have time to get to it. And this, we may need another session with this, Don.
One thing for clarification: when Giuliani said "take care of this right away," what did he mean by that statement? Did he mean make it go away or resolve it?
Okay, I may have misspoke. In the fall of 2006.
Mm-hmm.
While U.S. Attorney Brownlee and I, through counsel Terry Kilgore of Southwest Virginia, while we're working on a $600 million resolution, I actually didn't know this. You can Google this stuff now. I didn't know this part of it. I just knew that all of a sudden something happened and the whole thing kind of fell apart. Other people are working on this too, including Senator Frist. You remember?
Bill Frist, yes.
From Tennessee, Senator Alexander from Tennessee, Representative Jenkins, Bill Jenkins, who is from Tennessee House Judiciary Committee. This is kind of going full steam. We're trying to get this done before I go back. I've gotten out of prison at the end of 2004 and 2005. We're working on this. At the end of 2006, we're trying to get this done because I'm going to go back before the Board of Medicine in Virginia And so John Brownlee's trying to get this done because I have to go into sworn testimony before the board. And my basic side of this was, well, look, I'm not interested in disclosing all this. I just want my case overturned. And there was supposed to be a financial sealed damage claim award to me of $50 million and a half a billion dollars, $500 million for New Pain Management Addiction Foundation. There was supposed to be another $50 million. Terry Kilgore actually increased the personal damage claim from $50 to $100 million. That made the $500 plus $100 to $600. If you look at the award from Purdue Pharma, $600 plus, then Brownlee got $34.5 million from the executives. That came brought it up to $634.5. And sometime between December and the end of October, well, exactly, according to the testimony of Brownlee, and someone may be able to obtain this testimony. I've not been able to obtain the actual testimony. C-SPAN did cover it, interestingly enough. Sometime in the fall of 2006, Giuliani contacted him. What that conversation was, I don't know. They ended up working out specific details. Originally, it was supposed to be a sealed damage claim. And it was changed to a misdemeanor civil claim and, excuse me, criminal claim. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. If you do a criminal claim, if you change it from civil to criminal and they go ahead and plead to certain things, then theoretically they cannot be recharged.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helped to kind of cap certain liability from executives at Purdue Pharma. John Brownlee did not notify me of this change, and so the sealed damage claim, which was a civil matter, changed to criminal, and Terry Kilgore refused to talk about it. Apparently, this ended up, John Brownlee ended up being one of the U.S. attorneys which was on the list to be fired. He was not fired, but he admits that he found out he was on President Bush's list to be fired because of this matter. It turned out that President Bush ended up requesting $600 million in his 2007 State of the Union address, though, in order to get on the right side of justice. It turns out, unfortunately, to be more of a posturing statement. We'll see if President Bush makes good on his request. It's an interesting request, and that would take some time to explain as well. But Giuliani is the counsel for Purdue Pharma. He intervenes in this matter. Giuliani was involved in a lot of financial transactions between Purdue Pharma and Asa Hutchinson, the DEA director, during this period of time. During the $5.2 billion OxyContin suit, my hospital case was ordered to go to Attorney General Ashcroft in 2002, and if you recall, Gonzalez was White House counsel at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He intervened in my case by recommending that the magistrate judge, Glenn Conrad, again of the Western District of Virginia, be promoted. That way it took him off the case. The federal judge, James Parker Jones, then refused to recuse himself from my hospital case and the $5.2 billion OxyContin case. And so he continued to pretty much ride that pony all the way through. You can capture the gist of this situation.
Yeah. Okay, Rich, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second here. We're going to take a short pause, let you catch your breath and let this soak in into the minds and hearts of the listening audience. You're listening to Evident Footprints with our special guest, Dr. Richard Norton, MD, and we'll be right back after a couple of messages, so don't go away.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. The Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to Idaho-Observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
HempUSA.org is now offering free shipping worldwide to better serve our customers. Our goal is to get these fine hemp products to you in the least amount of time so you can enjoy what the powder seeds and oil can do for you. HempUSA.org has a warning that the U.S. food supplies are dangerously low, and we urge you to protect your family with hemp storable foods today. Tomorrow may be too late. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. This incredible food source is loaded with enzymes so your body can digest the food you eat. And it creates an alkaline environment where cancer can't grow and parasites cannot live, and brings funguses, viruses, and bacterial levels down and to a halt. Try our powder seeds and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. If the body has the proper nutrition, it will heal itself. Ask yourself, why does our government not allow this crop to grow in the U.S.? This product is also great for pets and animals. Call 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org today.
Segment of Evident Footprints with special guest Dr. Richard Norton. That music you were just listening to was just sent to me. I received that today. It's absolutely fantastic. There are a number of songs here recorded by the late Tim Carr, and his widow Linda sent this music to me, and I'm going to be doing some work with this, and we're going to get this music released on Tetrahedron Records. Really incredible stuff. This man was very gifted, great voice, great guitar playing, really interesting stuff. Not easy, and he's one heck of a harmonica player as well. And as this show progresses through time, you're going to hear more of this music, I guarantee you. We're back with Dr. Norton. I had to cut you off so we could get a message in there, so I do apologize for that. Hope I didn't interrupt your stream of thought too much. We're discussing.
No, I enjoyed that. I was listening to that music. I was enjoying it.
It's nice, I'm telling you. I've listened to it three times today already.
Yeah, and, very relaxing.
And it's very uplifting, very spiritual stuff. I'm told by Linda and Bill, who also, Bill actually sent it on behalf of Linda, that Gordon Lightfoot was basically his mentor. And I hear a lot of his influence in the music, but really, really nice stuff. And he's also recorded some music of some other artists, particularly Phil Oakes. I really like Phil Oakes. A lot of people are not familiar with his music, but it's really nice stuff. Tim was a staunch supporter of Sea Shepherd. And as we go through time, I'm hoping to do a show or two on that organization. It's fantastic foundation, and we're going to fix our planet one way or the other. And Tim was a man whose life was devoted to that. And he was very, very talented. And he's still with us, too. I'll add.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you there.
No, go ahead.
I was when you said he was influenced by Gordon Lightfoot, I was thinking of the Gordon Lightfoot song, "If You Could Read My Mind, Love."
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking that had certain, as it was playing for some reason, I was thinking that, and it's interesting you said that he was mentored by Gordon Lightfoot or had some association with Gordon Lightfoot. It is very beautiful. I was enjoying listening to that, Tom.
Yeah. During the break, I was thinking, and maybe for a moment we could backtrack for any new listeners that just joined us.
We'll have to multiple times on this story.
If you can just give me a moment, okay? OxyContin, I'm going to ask you in a moment to give us a definition of what that is, and you know, this was a story that hit the news a while back in relation to the problems that Rush Limbaugh was having. And I heard some outrageous amounts of this drug that he had supposedly been taking or acquiring. He had a very severe addiction. And I know being addicted to any kind of drug is a difficult mountain to climb, or to get off of, however you want to put it. And his reward for that was number one, most of us would go to jail. I mean, you were charged with, basically you were set up, in regard to this drug. And here's someone that actually broke the law and really should have been made an example of. And he gets a $400 million follow-up contract on his broadcasting career. I mean, you know, this is the absurdity and the insanity that's going on here. But if you would, that's my rant, if you would explain to the listeners what OxyContin is, what it's prescribed for, and the dangers of it. Of course, we know it's addictive, but if you could give us some specifics so that people can feel like they understand how important this is.
Sure, I'd be happy to, Tom. You actually raised another issue of people's addiction to it, including Rush Limbaugh. And while Rush Limbaugh may be popular or unpopular to certain listeners, as a physician, I guess I want to feel sympathetic to anybody who gets involved in dependencies of anything, regardless of whether it's drugs or alcohol or sex or work or cleaning or control. We have a lot of politicians addicted to control right now. My heart goes out to them. I wish that they would listen to this, because we're going to talk about the model of addiction that prevailed in the $5.2 billion OxyContin suit eventually here. OxyContin is essentially oxycodone. That's really all it is. It's just oxycodone, which is a opiate analgesic. And the reason why it was, when used properly, OxyContin actually at that time was the best opiate analgesic that was ever marketed to physicians as far as to the public to be used by prescription use. Unfortunately, it was misused because OxyContin, which is a brand name of oxycodone, is a pill which is a high dose of oxycodone, which a person can take, and it's released slowly by the system, by the person's body, through what they call a slow release mechanism. The actual word is slow release vehicle. And in other words, the tablet is slowly dissolved in your body, and that way the oxycodone, which is the active ingredient, isn't made available to the body so quickly. So the specific advantage of OxyContin was that when a person takes these high dosages, which are released slowly, they can take it over a period of time. The perception was, it certainly was correct in my patients, when you use short-acting opiates such as hydrocodone, Lorotabs, or short-acting any opiate analgesic like Percocet or Tab, etc. When a person was taking that at night, they were having a lot of problems with their sleep, and they would fall into what they call a pain management syndrome type of situation where they would have trouble sleeping. When they'd have trouble sleeping, they would have more problems with pain, because when you're sleeping, your certain system called a reticular activating system is supposed to shut down so that your postural muscles like your neck and your back will actually relax. When a person takes the wrong medicine at night, when they're not being treated properly, their reticular activating system, which is a subconscious system which keeps your neck up. If your audience is sitting and listening, their neck is probably in an erect position. If they're standing, their back is in an erect position, and they're not thinking about that. That's part of the reticular activating system. When they go to sleep, eventually that shuts down. When a physician messes with the patient's sleep by prescribing them certain medications like hydrocodone and Lorotab and Soma, which is supposedly a muscle relaxant, these are probably real common names to maybe some of your listeners at this time of the night when they're not able to sleep. And so what happens over a period of time, that reticular activating system just stays on 24/7. And these people start having neck pain and back pain, the problem which they went to the doctor for in the first place, probably. And the doctor's giving them Lorotabs and Somas, and it's creating more pain in the long run because these people can't sleep. And over a period of time, they have more and more problems. Anyway, OxyContin was supposed to avoid that, and it did. Unfortunately, what Purdue Pharma failed to do is really be honest with the physicians and society, and it turns out they really couldn't be honest because it was the failing of their OxyContin. The slow release vehicle, which they communicated to the physicians, was a secret patented, highly technical system, which you'd have to be a chemist to bypass. This is basically their words. It turns out to be wax. And I couldn't even actually disclose that until just a couple months ago when Ramoxy was finally released by another pharmaceutical company, King Pharmaceuticals. People were asking, what's the difference between Ramoxy and OxyContin? Well, they finally acknowledged that OxyContin is just wax. And the controversy evolved over time where the FDA forced Purdue Pharma to black box OxyContin because they said, hey, this is much easier to effect than you led everybody to believe. Well, but what happened, they admitted that crushing the tablet could effect the slow release mechanism. It would affect it to some degree, but what a person actually had to do was crush it, put it in water, heat it up, remove the wax, and then essentially they had synthetic heroin. And I was a lecturer for Purdue Pharma. I wasn't aware of that until I was in prison serving time for a judge who was caught stealing from the hospital. And the inmates told me that, and I said, oh, my gosh. Well, I'm going to have to sort of go back and rewind this presentation. I have to sort of kind of do it in a pyramid form where I give you the short bullet points as I did, and then I have to kind of unravel it. Before I do that, I need to get us all on the same page, because until you really have a certain perspective and a new paradigm on things, a lot of these numbers just will not add up, and your audience will say, this Dr. Norton guy, he's telling us stuff, and I'm trying to figure out how this makes sense, and these numbers don't add up.
Mm-hmm.
Let me, Don, give you a hypothetical situation. Now, this is just a hypothetical, but I am the $5.2 billion suit, and I lived through this. I like to kid with people that I'm the most blessed man on the earth. They put $25 million on Saddam Hussein's head and $5.2 billion on mine, and I'm still alive talking to you about it. So I have been blessed, and I really do mean that. But I had to look at life completely different because my whole world was turned upside down, and I had to start figuring out that there's more dots for me to connect here, and I've got to look at this differently. And after I started obtaining more information, it started to make sense. Now, let me just give you a hypothetical, Don, and you just walk through it with me. Suppose you are the President of the United States. You beat Obama and John McCain, and in January 2009, you're sitting in the Oval Office, and you got your feet up on the desk, and I'm the Attorney General Mukasey, and I walk in, and I say, President Nikoloff, I need to debrief with you for just a few minutes. And you say, sure, Rich, go ahead and sit down and talk to me. And, you know, I say, President Nikoloff, you're going to be choosing your own Attorney General, and I know that you haven't had time to catch up with all this stuff. You're nice, clean, cut American guy, and you follow the law, and you pay your taxes, and now you're the president, and I got to tell you what time it is. Oh, it's over 30 years of the war on drugs. The federal government controls 98% of the drugs sold on the street as far as cocaine, marijuana, and heroin. And you sort of drop your feet off the desk, and your jaw drops, and your eyes open, and you look at me, and you say,
It sounds to me like you've been reading the Idaho Observer.
Well, you know,
that's what I would say.
Yeah, you might say, and you might say, you know, Attorney General Norton, I've heard of rumors of this. I surely don't believe this. Tell me more. And I say, well, President Nikoloff, if you're going to argue this with me, you're accusing me of incompetence, because if you think I couldn't get in control of this market in 30-something years, you're telling me I'm incompetent. And what's more important to me, President Nikoloff, is if you want to abdicate control of a half a trillion to trillion dollar a year business to somebody else, you need to tell me who you're going to abdicate control of this to. And you might sit back in your big black leather chair and put your feet back up on the desk and look at me through your shoes on the desk and say, it's a good point, isn't it? And I'd say, well, go ahead. Tell me who you're going to abdicate a three-quarter trillion dollar a year business to, President Nikoloff. And by the way, this heroin that's coming from Asia in the 90s, where the gangs are getting stronger again, we've decided to use this new prescription drug called OxyContin, because we found out that it's actually much easier to bypass the slow-release vehicle in it. And we set up this deal with the makers where we can actually get the Mossad, where, because it's made in Israel now, by the way, and they work with the Dixie Mafia, and they provide us goodly amounts of this stuff, and we can put it on the streets, and we can keep Asian heroin off the streets, and our citizens get good pharmaceutical-grade synthetic heroin, essentially. We can keep the Chinese out of our market. And guess what? Guess where all that money goes, President Nikoloff? Well, where? Well, that goes into the Department of Justice and the Drug Task Force coffers. And that doesn't have earmarks. That's all discretionary money. And so you're going to get to spend about $1 trillion of your business, whether it's cocaine, heroin, OxyContin, marijuana, whatever. Those go to whatever you want to spend, black ops or whatever. Oh, well, Attorney General Norton, where is that going now? Well, you get to spend it wherever you want. The Congress doesn't have any discretionary power. In fact, don't you remember where everybody wanted to choose who the president was going to be because you get to choose the judges? It's the president that gets to choose the federal judges. That you think? Do you think federal judges and the president cares about abortion or non-abortion or anything? It's the money, President Nikoloff. It's the money. Oh, yeah. So you mean that these judges get to decide where this money goes? Well, that's what their orders are for. Well, where's it going right now? Well, about 80% of incumbents' money comes from illegal drug sales and forfeitures and things like this on the war with drugs. Now, whether or not you want to believe this is only an analogy, Don. I'm not telling you this is fact, but I am the $5.2 billion physician that survived through this ordeal. And there was a good movie. In fact, there's a program on History Channel called The Killing of Pablo Escobar. I don't know if any of the listeners take any time to watch TV. They probably shouldn't, but we all succumb to this temptation. And it describes in quite good detail how President George Bush Sr. went and met with the Medellin cartel and got involved in that in 1983 while he was vice president with President Reagan. And eventually they killed Pablo Escobar. And you'll notice there's a keen interest always in this war with drugs in Colombia, etc. Basically, the story, the movie called Clear and Present Danger is based on a true story. The Tom Clancy, I don't know if you ever saw that movie or not. Any of your listeners saw that movie, Clear and Present Danger. That's based on a true story. It came to a head in the 1983 when Colombian cartel attempted to undermine American currency through Mexican banks. And the issue was you could not eradicate drugs. The point was to, quote, control it. And control it meant actually gain control of it and be involved in it and share in the profits and proceeds. And, again, whether the listeners want to perceive that this is reality or not, I'm just asking them to consider it as an analogy. And let's just work with this paradigm in mind. And then perhaps they can see how things turned out, because it's very interesting right now that Senator Obama's vice president running mate is Joseph Biden, who was a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who happened to be at the meeting in Philadelphia in 2004. That Senator Schumer was the one who introduced Mukasey, and Senator Schumer and Senator Feinstein of California were the only senators on the Democratic side who voted for Mukasey, and that, Attorney General Mukasey to replace Gonzalez, and that the whole story, which Senator Specter, who I briefed on this situation in 2004, when he confronted Gonzalez, and this was the matter that Attorney General Gonzalez resigned on, it's very interesting that you no longer hear about it. You no longer hear about the $634 million they obtained from Purdue Pharma, but you have available to the $600 million fax, and you can post that on your site for your audience to pick up. It's on several other sites, too. We can discuss that later. It's very interesting that Tim Kaine, Governor Kaine of Virginia, Senator Webb of Virginia, Senator Warner of Virginia, were all on Senator Obama's shortlist for vice president. It's very interesting that Senator Obama's first visit after he won the presumptive nomination for Democratic candidate for president visited Rick Boucher of Southwest Virginia. He is a good friend of Judge Jones, the OxyContin judge. It just so happens that the incidence of overdose of OxyContin continues to be high in the, quote, southern Appalachian area of the United States. A lot of people still like to say this is the hillbilly area, and if you remember, OxyContin had the eponym hillbilly heroin. Well, it's very difficult to find a physician who prescribes OxyContin right now. Yet as Senator Webb stated, it's interesting to note that while physicians prescribe less OxyContin, the overdose incidence of OxyContin has risen. That's because this region is the logistics center for the Fed's OxyContin hub. It's interesting that today on September, well, in my area it's today, and some of your listening audience is still yesterday. The date is September 9th, Tuesday, in my area. Obama is going to go to Russell County, Virginia. Russell County, Virginia is Assistant U.S. Attorney Tom Bondurant's district.
Okay, Rich, yeah. I've got to cut you off here. Okay. For a second, we're about to open the second hour, so we'll be right back with Evident Footprints and our special guest, Dr. Richard Charles Norton. Don't go away. More to come. Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm Don Nikoloff, your host, and our special guest, Richard Norton, MD, is back with us. Sorry to cut you off. We have to pay attention to time here since we're doing this in segments. I interrupted you. Hopefully you've kept your train of thought. For those listeners that just joined us, we are discussing a very important case involving OxyContin, a very addictive drug. Dr. Norton, you were saying.
Thank you, Don. Yes, we were just in the middle of the political connections of this whole OxyContin fiasco, which caused the resignation of Attorney General Gonzalez and the resignation of U.S. Attorney Brown Lee of the Western District of Virginia. It's a kind of a swirling controversy. I just want to clarify for the audience, OxyContin is a highly, it's a medication which a person can become very dependent and suffer strong withdrawal. One of the specific elucidating capacities of the new model of addiction, which I wrote and defended in the $5.2 billion OxyContin suit, is that anything can be addicting. And we'll need to get into that. I will finish my train of thought. On September 9, 2008, Senator Obama is to visit Rick Boucher and company and the people, the good people of Southwest Virginia. And one should actually ask themselves, why is this man who's in the middle of a contest for the President of the United States going to go to Southwest Virginia and go visit the people of good people of Southwest Virginia? And I want to clarify, Southwest Virginia is not West Virginia. Southwest Virginia is a small portion of Virginia proper. The counties of Lee, Wise, Scott, Russell County, is a very interesting, has a very rich history in our nation. And anyway, if you're a politician, you go to the places which you have a potential of winning, that you know, if you've already sewn up a district where you got 80% of their voters, you're not going to visit there. You've already got them. You're not going to go to a district in which only 20% of the voters are going to vote for you, because it's no sense in wasting your time. You go to the areas where there's a marginal difference, where your presence can make a difference. And you have to remember that in the Southwest Virginia area, the southwestern portion of Virginia, Obama has a rating about 15%. He may be up to as high as 20% now. It's usually down to 5 to 10%, depending on which county. It's a strong Republican area. And you have to ask yourself why he went and saw Rick Boucher, and why Tim Kaine was on his short list and Mark Warner was on his short list and Senator Webb was on his list. I'd like to congratulate Senator Webb, because he got off that. He distanced himself from the situation the best he could.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Warner's was the previous governor of Virginia and the previous attorney general, and he was the attorney general when my case was going down. His uncle is Judge Fugit, William Fugit, of Lee County, Virginia. Mark Warner refused to prosecute Judge Fugit and his son Charles Fugit, who had the 300% medical equipment leases with the hospital I served, along with the CEO and COO, James Davis. He refused to investigate the death of the incarcerated witness after I got the tape recording of James Davis admitting what happened, how he was coerced by Prosecutor Bonner to claim that I had a kickback relationship with him, or they were going to put him and his daughter and his daughter's boyfriend in jail for multiple years because this, quote, boyfriend had been sent down to Mexico by the sheriff who was involved in the OxyContin ring. And then they arrested him on his way back and set him up and set up the administrator and force the administrator to say, I had a kickback, and I have a tape recording of this, and the transcripts are on what we call the Deagle documents, which I sent to you.
Mm-hmm.
You have all of that. You have the objections to PSI. You have a copy of the $600 million facsimile sent to Terry Kilgore, which is giving a lot of politicians headaches right now, including Senator Leahy, which tried to get this cleared. And then Senator Schumer decided, no, I got better purposes for that money, and put a lot of money into Hillary's campaign and eventually Obama's campaign, etc. Well, Mark Warner is running against Gilmore, who was previously governor as well, and that's going to be a race to watch, because This information has been given to presidential candidate McCain, who is running with Sarah Palin against Obama and Senator Biden. Senator Biden is in the middle of this controversy as well. He was at the Congressional Black Caucus Assembly in Philadelphia in 2004, and lo and behold, he's on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And there's just a whole lot of people involved in this diversion of the $600 million resolution. If you recall, we were supposed to put $500 million into a pain management addiction foundation because of a new model of addiction which prevailed in the OxyContin suit. And when I honestly think what happened is that the politicians didn't think that this would happen when it did happen. They decided they had better uses for the money. Now, this is a little bit of a scary indictment for socialized medicine because you realize that as good as socialized medicine may or may not be, the fact is when the politicians have the opportunity to see money and spend it somewhere else, they do. And this is an opportunity where they had $500 million to spend on a foundation for pain management and addiction research, and they'd rather steal it and use it for their own campaigns, and it's very discouraging.
They were able to do that basically because this wasn't really publicized, right? I mean,
want to suppress it and keep it quiet, and that's Mukasey's job. Mukasey, that was what Mukasey was put in for by Senator Schumer. He needs to suppress the whole thing. And it's very disappointing. It's, of course, this is the guy that thinks that waterboarding isn't torture. So, you can kind of connect these dots here.
There's one more dot I'd like to connect for you, and this may have some significance in why Joseph Biden was selected as the vice presidential running mate of Barack Obama. And it may have something to do with at least your addiction model, if nothing else. I don't know if you're familiar with a gentleman by the name of Larry Sinclair, but I'm sure many in the listening audience are familiar with
this. Yeah, that's a deep story, too, that the audience may need to hear.
Yeah. Larry, just a quick summary, Larry Sinclair was a man who admittedly had a prison record and had been in prison a number of times for fraud. But back in 1999, he was in a bar and was introduced to Barack Obama. They had drinks. According to him, they entered Mr. Sinclair's rented limousine. Partook of cocaine, and his description of himself was that he snorted cocaine, but that Barack Obama smoked crack cocaine. And then, of course, they engaged in sex in a limousine. He had no idea who Barack Obama was at the time. He wasn't aware that he was involved in politics. Didn't really know much about him at all, and I suppose under the influence of drinks and then drugs, he cared less as the night went on. He described at least one other instance where Barack Obama actually went to Sinclair's hotel room. This took place in upstate Illinois, so. You know, there are hotel records and there are records of the limousine rental and what have you.
Good luck getting them, right?
Yeah. In this particular instance, Barack Obama brought the drugs to the hotel room, according to Sinclair. Sinclair went on various radio interviews. He was interviewed numerous times by Jeff Rentz on GCN, on the Jeff Rentz show. Jeff was posting the archives of the audio interviews from his show on right on the front page of his website, rents.com, and he had links to Larry Sinclair's own blog site. Now, they try to portray anyone that uses the internet as a wacko or a kook, yet it was invented and run and is still being run by the Pentagon and the intelligence agencies. And I mean, we have overwhelming proof that it was for their purposes. And when they decided on the basis of, I think it was a man in England that came up with a way and the idea that the whole public could benefit from this, and they could use it as a data gathering mechanism, the internet was expanded. So that said, Sinclair's blog began to be attacked by an attorney, attack dog that Obama hired, and he defended himself very well, very, very lucidly. It had the ring of truth. Now, some time ago, a little over a month ago, he had a press conference in front of the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., and he was arrested and by the Washington police and taken to Delaware under a so-called warrant for his arrest. And simultaneously, a second warrant came out of the state of Colorado, issued by some sheriff whose name I don't recall at the moment. But the prosecutor of the case in Delaware happened to be Joe Biden's son.
Just happened to be.
Just happened to be. And Biden, of course, just happened to be picked as the running mate. You want to talk about political favors, there's one right there. Well, they quieted Sinclair down, but what's interesting is that even reverse speech analysis of his comments said that he was telling the truth. Now, it's a very controversial technology. Some people will try to debunk it, but to me, it actually reveals things that even a lie detector test doesn't, a regular polygraph test, which is not admissible in court. I heard reverse speech of Kobe Bryant's statements when he had this problem in I think it was Denver. He was charged with raping a woman and somehow got her to drop the charges. But when you listen to the reverse speech, he said some pretty nasty things describing the situation. It's amazing what comes out with that technology. All accounts, what I've heard of Larry Sinclair, what I've read, what he's posted on his blog site, the supporting information, the man sounds like he's telling the truth. And then the reverse speech even further indicates that that is the case.
Yeah.
So I thought that would be interesting on the basis of the fact that, you know, this is 1999. Now, I'm not saying that's going on right now, but it's certainly different from what we've heard from Barack Obama. And and you're suspecting his role is, you know, he's as much in this as these other politicians that you're mentioning.
Correct. He it's interesting that as much as Joe Biden likes to talk, he doesn't talk about this much anymore. You know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask one more question. What is or what was Arlen Specter's role? Because what comes to mind is his role in the Warren Commission investigation, where they reenacted, and he was the person who came up with the single bullet theory in the JFK assassination.
Specter was?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh yes, he was. I've got pictures of him at the site.
Yeah.
Dealey Plaza when they recreated the, you know, measuring angles and the windshield and taking the car there on the site and looking up at the buildings, you know, at the Texas School Book Depository. You know, it was a farce, really.
Yeah.
So much information has come out about that. And I don't mean to digress, but I'm just wondering what Specter's role is in this.
Well, I think that's a good question. I briefed a lot of this information was given to Senator Specter in December 2004, and it's now that you've said that, it opens up a whole new paradigm shift in my own mind, because you've got to wonder why Senator Specter went along with the Democrats and confronted Gonzalez on this OxyContin issue and nodded over to Leahy that, yep, we got him. And then they went ahead and confronted U.S. Attorney Brownlee. Whether he's in on it with the Democrats or not, I don't know. I can just tell you that he has not, they haven't pushed anymore. Now that they got the money, now that they've stolen the money, they don't talk about this anymore. And so this was a major coup as far as not just getting rid of Gonzalez. You got to remember that the Department of Justice controls the DEA, controls the drug money. And, that's a lot of discretionary money. So essentially, the Democrats, through Mukasey, have gotten back in control of the OxyContin cartel. The Bushes had pretty strong influence over the cocaine cartel. As originally mentioned, President Bush Sr. worked on establishing that. And if you can remember, the Republicans were just a force that couldn't stop there for a while. The previous attorney, Bob Bittman, who was involved in my hospital case, was the assistant U.S. attorney under Ken Starr, and he was the lead investigative prosecutor in the Clintons in the 90s. That had nothing to do with Monica Lewinsky. What the big uproar was with the Clintons versus Republicans, which Hillary would call the right-wing political machine, conspiratorialist, whatever. The Clintons were getting control in the late 90s, mid-80s, and late 90s. They were kind of getting more influential in the cocaine cartel. And, I mean, that's basically Clinton's rise to power. What is that, MENA, Arkansas, the big depot for cocaine? I don't know all of the details, but it essentially... Clinton was kind of under the Bushes, and then he got a little uppity and got a little too much power, I guess, and there was a big controversy going on there. And eventually, if you recall, after Bush got in, they kind of made peace, etc. And
well, there's a lot of other money laundering going on the side. And it's funny you mentioned Ken Starr, because he was representing Hillary Clinton's Children's Defense Fund, which received, according to Ambassador Leo Wanta, $250 million. That's what Foster brought back to Hillary's Children's Defense Fund just a few days before he was found having committed suicide, shooting himself several times in the back of the head, and then driving himself to, was it Fort Marcy Park? You know,
Ken Starr, wait a minute, this is it. Say this again.
Ken Starr
used to work for Hillary.
Oh, yes, for the Children's Defense Fund. And that, according to Wanto, was a Navy SEAL project. So you're talking probably about drug smuggling there.
Of course.
And is it any wonder that they had Ken Starr conduct that investigation? Because they couldn't let that money come out in that investigation. And Michael Rodriguez, who became Michelle Rodriguez, I wrote about that in my Wantagate article for The Observer back in January 2007, was demoted to a prosecutorial position somewhere, I think, in Sacramento, San Francisco or Sacramento, somewhere in Northern California. But... not to digress, there was that relationship between Hillary and Ken Starr and this Children's Defense Fund. And it had nothing to do with defending children. It was, according to Wanta, it was a Navy SEAL project.
That's a pretty interesting point dot to connect there, Don. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. It gets involved even deeper when, if you recall, when Clinton had been impeached and this was just going to the Senate to see if they could remove him from office. If you recall, Al Gore gets sent up to the big enchilada, the Chabad up there, Shemtov. Rabbi Shemtov's, and he meets with the Hasidic Jews in New Jersey. Essentially, the manufacturing plant of Purdue Pharma goes off to Israel, and so now they're part of the equation too, and they get a cut of the action. And It makes it much easier for the Drug Task Force agents. They don't have to go to Mexico and all kinds of things and try to put the deals together. That they can just go ahead and have it brought in directly by the Mossad agents, and they transfer it to the Dixie Mafia, and they send it through the Drug Task Force pawns, which are essentially poor guys. I shouldn't say poor guys as victims, but some of them are the people that got involved in drug trade somewhere or another. They get busted and they get offered a deal. You want to become a mule, and sure, and unfortunately they get paid not in product, not in money. And so if you see a constant rise of incidents of addiction / drug crime / overdose and all the problems associated with that, and you say, well, gee, I can't even find a physician writing OxyContin now. Well, these are just more of the dots that you can connect and figure out what's going on, what their story is. When we get a chance, I would like to talk about the model of addiction, which I presented, and because this is really the good side. This is what eventually had predicated the $500 million trust to set up a pain management and addiction foundation. This was associated with President Bush's 2007 State of the Union address, where he asked for $600 million. This wasn't a punitive play pretty there where, you know, you could just kind of look at it. This was a real change in our capacity to prevent and control addiction, especially for physicians which are involved in pain management. Remember, about 95% of all physicians have some association with pain management. And the truth of the matter is, most of them don't know what they're doing, including the pain management specialists that are certified, because up until the $5.2 billion case, we had no scientific definition of addiction. So here you had a situation where physicians are writing medications where people could have a major complication called addiction. And the truth of the matter is, including Rich Norton, Dr. Norton, until 2001, didn't have a scientific definition of addiction. We had all kinds of objective data as to what people did when they were addicted and all these type of mannerisms, but we honestly didn't know what it was. Well, let's go back to what happened now. In 2000, I get convicted of 8 felony counts, all associated with one allegation of a kickback. Before I go to prison, I get all the goods on the U.S. attorney and the judges and everybody involved in the case and show that, no, I'm innocent, and these guys are just hiding a big cover-up, including Judge Fugit, who happens to be involved with Sheriff Parsons in a major OxyContin ring in Southwest Virginia.
Now, they went after your assets, too, right?
Yeah, now I don't have any money. I've got 5 kids that my wife's going to try to take care of, and you know, they just soon leave her on the street. They don't care. I mean, this is they got an agenda now. Well, I'm told by my attorneys they're not going to help me with the tape recording of this telephone conversation. They're not going to help me with the newly discovered evidence where I find that the prosecutor had found documents where they're destroying tapes showing that the board knew about my contracts, etc. And instead, they convey a message from the prosecutor saying, lie down or you're going to spend the rest of your life in prison. Well, I don't lie down. And in fact, it was very interesting. A lot of very special events happened, which led me to believe that I needed to continue and fight this. So 6 months after I'm in prison, the $5.2 billion OxyContin case hits me. Well, basically, I end up firing my attorneys because I see them doing the same thing they did in the hospital case. And so I've got a 39-cent pen in prison, and I'm answering the plaintiff's questions. And I remember to this day dropping the pen and saying, oh, my gosh. We don't have a scientific definition of addiction. I know what they can do with black and white. Can you imagine what they can do with this? And I was really frightened, Don. I remember praying. I remember praying, saying, Lord, help me with this one. Well, I'm in prison, and there's all these addicts there, and they got, you know, drug schools there, and the inmates are telling me that 500 hours to just say no isn't going to hack, isn't going to cut it, and they're not going to be able to take care of themselves on the street. And I'm watching these guys. I say, well, if there's any place where a man can find out what addiction is, this is it. So I'm watching these people, and after a month or two, I realize, pardon me, 100% of these guys have an obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, this is kind of a clue, Don. This is a correlation here. 100% of these guys have an obsessive compulsive disorder. So I start watching these guys closer, and I start picking their brains. Now, you got to remember, I'm trying to get my case overturned. I'm trying to fight the $5.2 billion suit. I'm trying to, you know, talk to a desperate wife with five children that's being faced with 13 lawsuits and just, you know, all hell is breaking loose. And I'm getting, you know, signals that I got to send motions and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I realized that addiction is a manifestation of an obsessive compulsive disorder. Yes, there's dependence and there's withdrawal, but, you know, if a person drinks caffeine and they stop all of a sudden, they'll withdraw. But that doesn't mean they're addicted. That means they have a dependence on it. And a person can pretty much see through that. They can say, okay, well, I just need to, you know, go through a little bit of withdrawal here and I'll be done with it. Unfortunately, when a person has a severe obsessive compulsive disorder, they have all kinds of issues of unhappiness and dysphoria and everything, so that when they go through with their withdrawal, they say, oh, I can't handle this, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the bottom line for the Purdue Pharma suit, what prevailed in the suit with Purdue Pharma is that the intensity of the addiction was not proportionate to the intensity of the stimulus. It was proportionate to the intensity of the obsessive compulsive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if somebody, you know, somebody can get addicted to washing their hands, to cleaning, to sex, to work, to whatever, and where's the stimulus? It's a manifestation of their obsessive compulsive disorder. And what was important in the OxyContin case is that people were saying, well, gee, it's this highly addictive drug, and it's really strong and everything else, and it was really strong, and when a person bypassed the slow release mechanism, they would have an even higher rush, and they would have a higher dependency and a higher withdrawal, a more significant withdrawal phenomenon. But that was not an addiction. What was that? And the intensity of the stimulus wasn't the important factor to the intensity of addiction. The intensity of addiction was proportionate to the intensity of obsessive compulsive disorder. This has been affirmed by positron emission tomograms, and it is now the legal and scientific standard. It's now the business standard. King Pharmaceuticals, who's releasing their new medication, Ramoxy, has acknowledged that the standard of care now for all physicians doing pain management is to concurrently screen and treat for obsessive compulsive disorders. Well, this is significant.
Now, I have a question here.
Go ahead.
I think it's an appropriate one.
Go ahead.
Considering the history of the Tavistock Institute in London and the mind control and the propaganda and all the tools used to control the masses, polling whether they're opinion polls or whether they're just fabricated polls to cause false realities and illusions, do you suspect that possibly these studies have been conducted on some level and it was determined that even though there wasn't this model of addiction that you're talking about, the one that you actually brought forth yourself,
yeah.
Do you suspect that they knew on some level that it would create an obsessive compulsive disorder in anyone? What comes to mind here, and I don't mean to digress, but to draw an analogy, we have a similar situation in the tobacco industry. And when you hear or read things that they've found as many as 8,000 different additives or chemicals that are being produced through the smoking of a cigarette, and all of these multi-billion dollar settlements with the states, and I've not seen any of these programs actually implemented in any of the states. Ohio, where I am, received at least $5 billion in that major tobacco company settlement some years back. And that money was spent. That money was not, it was illegally spent, wasn't spent on these programs, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
So in the sense of that they understand what this is, do they use these events, your suit or any other event like that, just as a means to get their hands on the money? In other words, they're just dealing with you. They make the problem go away. They keep the media from reporting it. And the drugs are still being sold down the street, despite what you went through and despite your whistleblowing. These people are just so arrogant and brazen that they just get away with it. They steal the money. Is that what you have seen in terms of how they're covering up these side effects or the causes of the side effects?
Yeah, you're raising up a whole Pandora's box, and it's probably true. Unfortunately, there's probably as far as getting into, you know, motives and origins of different things, it may be true that the government did know these things, and it may be true that the government actually designed OxyContin.
Or the pharmaceutical companies, maybe on their behalf. You know, give us a drug.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Give us a reason why we should stay in Afghanistan, for instance.
Exactly. Or, I mean, when you start understanding the real motives of certain people in government and you recognize that, you know, they're not there to take care of you. They're there to enrich their own lives. Pardon me. Pardon me. And the facts being what they are, you soon recognize that, yeah, the whole idea of this Pollyanna concept of going and getting this new addiction foundation going, etc., is absurd. Well,
yeah, it's their cash cow, in other words,
yeah.
On paper, anyway. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you why. I'm frustrated, and why physicians and nurses and healthcare people are frustrated. It's not just because they stole the money. Gee, we're getting used to that. Physicians and healthcare providers, nurses, nurse practitioners, everybody, we're getting used to the idea that people, you know, they steal things from you. The government steals things, and all kinds of things happen to healthcare providers, and they've pretty much gotten used to it. And
sounds like we have a obsessive compulsive disorder to allow it to happen.
Well, the frustrating point in this is this: they targeted physicians and that were doing pain management. Now you got to understand what targeting means. That doesn't mean investigating them. That means taking them out.
Mm-hmm.
And the documents that I've given to you will demonstrate that that's exactly what happened here. I was a lecturer for Purdue Pharma. I was doing pain management, and I was taken off the streets. Now, while they're running their OxyContin hubs and cocaine hubs and all this stuff, you know, and they can justify in their mind they need this money for that or something like that, they're taking physicians out of the clinics, forcing the patients on the street so they can feed these OxyContin federal distribution hubs.
Yeah, and then get them back into the system through the courts again, which generates more money.
So they're slaves.
Yeah,
so they're
exactly.
Slaves. And yeah, exactly. Now, somewhere in here, there's a little conflict of interest. When you have the Department of Justice targeting physicians, driving them out of the clinics, driving the patients out of the clinics onto the street, like Rush Limbaugh, so that he has to purchase his OxyContin on the street at $40 a pill. It seems to me, Don, that slippery slope of temptation has hit bottom to the depths of the abyss, and it's time where people need to look at this and say, can we do better with this? You know?
You know, this is the figure that you just said, $40 a pill. Pardon me for interrupting, but this is just a thought that I had. if Rush Limbaugh, if it's true what I heard, and I don't think I was mistaken in hearing that he was consuming as many as 1,000 of these a week, I don't know if a person could stay alive. It certainly could have been the cause of the deafness that he was suffering. But $40,000 a week, that's $160,000 a month. I mean, this is a big business. He had the kind of income to support that kind of habit. But, I don't think anyone in their right mind would consume that much drugs. And I wonder if that's an exaggeration. Seems I heard that figure several times.
Yeah, I don't know the details of Rush Limbaugh.
He could have been, peddling him himself. I'm not implying that, I don't know about the drug. What the toxicity level is and how close a person would come to dying from taking that many.
It would be surprising to me if he was up taking that much at all. If I heard that the amount was large, I didn't hear that amount.
Yeah.
And I don't want to abuse Rush Limbaugh despite whatever political ideals he has that are the same or different than mine. I just want to use it as an example. Where he acknowledged that he didn't get his medicine from the physician. He got it off the streets. And the streets is supplied by our own government. Now, let me give you another case in point. I don't know if you or your listeners are aware of a big case in Myrtle Beach where they sacked this clinic in Myrtle Beach, and one of the physicians took off to New Zealand. It was a big thing in the papers where they extradited her because she felt because they wanted to bring her back and try her, and she was afraid she wasn't going to get a fair trial because she, her this or that. Well, and they end up, convicting all these guys on, these counts and that counts. They ruin their lives. They go to prison. Well, I just happened to be in prison with a fellow named Ronnie Messer. And he happened to be the government's key witness in that. I was in prison in South Carolina, Edgefield, South Carolina, Edgefield prison camp there. And Ronnie Messer was the government's key witness in that case, and he heard about my $5.2 billion suit. And I asked Ronnie, I said, are those guys guilty? He just chuckled. He said, no. He said, I just said what the government told me to say. Well, you got to remember, I'm a little sensitive to this, but I try to act, just disinterested, I asked him a few more questions, and he said, well, I think the lead guy was guilty. I forgot what his name is. And he gave me some stories which he was involved with. It sounded like he could have been involved in some Medicare fraud, which is not right. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to excuse this. I don't want to just excuse any kind of illegal activity or fraud. But I was never certain that even the main owner of the clinic was involved in actual overprescribing, although he felt as though he could have been guilty, but as far as the other three or four physicians, he acknowledged that no, in fact, he had only obtained one or two prescriptions from the clinic and the rest he got from the government on the street. And then he went into detail on this and he shared with me that he got busted for diversion of his OxyContin, and they approached him. They said, well, you want to work for us? Well, of course he wants to work he's facing 10, 15, 20 years. And he tells me how the drug task force agent, Marshall, an FBI agent, took him to Florida from South Carolina and introduced him to a fellow who was to supply him with the OxyContin in cases of unopened, direct from the factory. This went on for just a couple months where he would go down to Florida and pick this up, and eventually they started just sending him the OxyContin direct from the factory, unopened, sealed containers, through UPS. and he would distribute this in large amounts throughout the community. And, of course, anytime there's a bust or anytime there's an overdose, they call it prescription drug fraud. And they make it sound as though all these doctors are overprescribing this OxyContin and they're ogres and money whores and everything else, And this is actually the other side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also happened to be in with a person named Joseph Cohen, and Joseph Cohen was from Florida, and he was essentially the in with the connection between the transfer from the Mossad, which would take tractor trailer fulls of this OxyContin directly from the manufacturing plant and make it basically park a trailer somewhere, and later the Dixie Mafia would pick this up and set it up for the Drug Task Force agents, which are essentially, you know, convicted felons, which the Drug Task Force agent uses to as pawns in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And he was involved in the transition.
HempUSA.org is now offering free shipping worldwide to better serve our customers. Our goal is to get these fine hemp products to you in the least amount of time so you can enjoy what the powder seeds and oil can do for you. HempUSA.org has a warning that the U.S. food supplies are dangerously low, and we urge you to protect your family with hemp storable foods today. Tomorrow may be too late. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. This incredible food source is loaded with enzymes so your body can digest the food you eat, and it creates an alkaline environment where cancer can't grow and parasites cannot live, and brings funguses, viruses, and bacterial levels down and to a halt. Try our powder seeds and oil today. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. If the body has the proper nutrition, it will heal itself. Ask yourself, why does our government not allow this crop to grow in the U.S.? This product is also great for pets and animals. Call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org today.
Houston, we have a problem.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
CBS Radio, let's go! We love CBS Radio! 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 We love CBS Radio!
And we're back. You're listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, Dr. Richard Norton. Dr. Norton, I interrupted you for those brief announcements there. We were really going down the rabbit hole on this. I want to let you continue here in our closing few minutes that we have here, and let you continue with this, and then maybe wrap this up. I know we're going to have you on the show again. This is a very, very complex issue, and I appreciate your patience in letting me interrupt and kind of take you off on a sidelight. But I see the opportunity to connect some dots here and awaken people as to what's going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of dots that can be connected. It's interwoven into the whole fabric of politics now. This is their lifeline, and this is their isolation system, where, you know, they've gotten so much money now, they're just completely insensitive, really, to their constituents, and that's why it's difficult to remove incumbents now from power unless they have a similar type backing from a federal judge. You notice, if you investigate representatives and senators, you'll see a lot of associations with federal judges as far as a supply of money and different attorneys. The man who filed the suit, Emmett Urey, the $5.2 billion suit, He's essentially the money man behind Rick Boucher and from Judge Jones. If you investigate the politics of Virginia, you'll see Emmett Urey in the middle of that and involved with a lot of transfers of cash. He's the one that originated the $5.2 billion suit. Let me share with you actually how that started. If you recall, after I was warned that if I didn't lie down, I'd spend the rest of my life in prison, they took Judge Fugit's, he was in retirement at this time, they took him out of retirement. He dropped indictments against the original plaintiffs, A.F. McCauley and Charles Ewing, and in return for filing that suit with Emmett Urey. That's the origination of the $5.2 billion suit. They pushed Charles Ewing out of the suit. He couldn't be controlled as well. They ended up putting another one of my patients, Charles Brummett, and A.F. McCauley in the suit. They combined it with another Dr. Brohey. They dismissed her from the case after I disclosed the things which I'm sharing with you to all the parties with, like I said, my 39-cent pen from prison. And the Deagle documents, too, has a copy of that letter, the eight-page letter which disclosed all this, broke up the $5.2 billion suit. They dismissed me as well, but they dismissed me not with prejudice. Any attorney knows that when you're dismissed from a case, it has to be delineated with or without prejudice, because if with prejudice, that means you don't have to come back. Excuse me, without prejudice. If it's with prejudice, that means that you could be called back in. If it just says dismissed, that means nothing. All that means is that you no longer obtain interrogatories. Well, that was exactly what my situation was. And basically, they quote, dismissed me, but I wasn't dismissed at all. It just kept me from finding all the interrogatories and interrupting this $5.2 billion scam. They sucked me back into it in 2004, because here I'm about ready to be discharged from prison, and they tried to find any way they could to keep me in because I got all the goods on these people. The reason why when it was released is because, as I stated in Senator Schumer and multiple political people had gone to the courts and requested copies of the case, and they wanted to eventually, unfortunately, I guess just for the money aspect, but it appears as though the judge knew that somebody else was looking over the shoulder, and you know, I was ahead and released. There's a whole lot more details, a whole lot more connections. It would take really a couple days to go through all these things. It would take time to explain how Jim Clyburn, the House Majority Whip, is involved in this. His brother is named Chili, or Charles Clyburn. Everybody called him Chili. That was his nickname. He actually helped write my appeal brief, which got the case sent to Attorney General Ashcroft, and started the whole thing. It's interesting to know the rise of power of a lot of these people are actually involved in my specific case, and it's interesting to speculate as to what deals were made, you know, as far as where certain things would go. It's interesting to know that this is back in the headlines again, as far as all these people were involved, where, you know, the rise to power were involved in this case, my case. I'm not saying I'm a special person. I just happen to be some guy who's walking through a field of landmines, you know, armed with nuclear warheads here type of thing.
Yeah.
But
Or depleted uranium.
Yeah, whatever. It's interesting to see how this is all coming back again. These same players that have this power are, you know, using it. It's interesting to know that Obama refused to take campaign spending limits and is making his trip to Russell County, Virginia, and that his some of his entourage, you know, in this area are the people that basically run the OxyContin ring. What's even more scandalous and disappointing is that it's not that they don't even care anymore. They have no shame about this anymore. this whole system has just gotten so that it just doesn't care. You can show mm-hmm. this stuff. They don't care.
You know, I'm putting myself in the shoes of the listening audience, and I am listening to this as if I'm a member of the audience, with a voice to speak for them. What could we be doing? Is pressure put on Congress a means through which we could let them know that we know what's going on and we demand some action in this? And I'm not talking about necessarily emails, but I'm talking about phone calls. I'm talking about getting people to go out and ask the media why they're not reporting this. Are you aware of
Yes, specifically. There is specifically something that the audience can do. I'm going to give the number of the House Judiciary Committee. And it would take me a while to explain. I would like to come back on the program and get more into the details of how the first resolution happened and how the Democrats diverted all that money. The telephone number of the House Judiciary Committee with the chairman, John Conyers, is this, 202-225-3951. Now, John Conyers has a complaint against Judge Jones. They know about the whole scam. They benefited by the whole scam. I mean, I don't know how much of Hillary's and Obama's campaign that money underwrote. His response to not proceeding with investigation of Judge Jones is he said is not that it was a horrendous situation. He just said, I haven't had enough complaints on it.
Well, then we should start complaining. Are you aware if McCain's or any other politician has benefited from this? Even the ones that dropped out of the race, are you aware of that at all?
I have no knowledge of McCain being involved in this particular fiasco, controversy, whichever you want to call it. Information from Hillary, what do they call them, candidate? Not candidates, or the people that go to the convention and vote for them.
The delegates.
The delegates. I have information, direct information. Like I said, it would take me days to actually give you all the dots that I have. It would take a while to debrief all this information. I have no information on McCain. I have significant information as far as the Democrats pretty much diverting this money. It's interesting how they set up Gonzalez to do this, like he's the big, bad, ugly guy. And these guys are good, you know. these politicians are good at doing the most horrendous crimes and then setting it up to make it look as though somebody else has done it. Anyway, I would like to get that number about one more time, Don,
Sure, go ahead, yeah.
It's John Conyers, House Judiciary Committee, 202-225-3951. And if anybody could do anything, it's very simple. Just call that number when they just say hello. Just say, I am a constituent from this state and I want to support the investigation of Judge James Parker Jones, the OxyContin judge. They don't even have to remember that. Just say that the OxyContin judge from Southwest Virginia, and they know. They got the complaint. You have a copy of the complaint against Judge Jones and the history of this, and they're familiar with it. It's just involved in so many politicians and so many people's lives that it's just too politically involved to do anything about it. The race involving Jim Gilmore and Mark Warner, this is a key issue. Mark Warner, the nephew of Judge Fugit, he's just got a campaign war chest full of OxyContin money. Tim Kaine, the governor of Virginia, is directly involved with the suppression of this information from the Board of Medicine, where they didn't even get to see the evidence. The president of the Board of Medicine is Steve Heretic of Virginia. He answers directly to Tim Kaine. He was involved as much as anybody in the diversion of the $600 million, which would have gone to a pain management addiction foundation, where we would have forced the government through the health care industry to say, hey, you know what, we actually can prevent and treat addiction. If anybody wants to call the Virginia Board of Medicine and say, hey, they want this reopened, this is all, everything I'm sharing with you is in the Virginia Board of Medicine's investigation of it. And Governor Tim Kaine of Virginia forced President Steve Heretic to keep the physicians from seeing this information.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Norton, we are out of time. I appreciate your coming on and sharing this information. And I want to get more into the next time you're on. I think we've got you scheduled for the 19th, is it? Somewhere around there.
I was thinking you said the 22nd. We can make
Or maybe it is the 22nd. I don't have the schedule right in front of me, but I know it's a little over a week from now. We will have you on again. I want to get more into this addiction model. I feel that's very important, but I wanted to cover much of this, and it worked out pretty well, I think. I want to encourage you and the listening audience to be watching for my piece, part three of the Three Stooges Go to Washington. We're going to be able to connect some dots with what Dr. Norton has brought out tonight. Although I didn't go into this particular aspect of Barack Obama, you're going to see where some of the money has gone. And you're going to find it interesting yourself, Dr. Norton. I want to thank you so much for your courage.
I'm looking forward to that.
And your fight to help individuals and American families that are suffering from this tragic situation. And I know that getting this money is going to support a foundation that's going to deal with these problems and all sorts of addictions, not just OxyContin.
That's true.
We need to get these drugs off the street, and we need criminal investigations of all the people involved in this. And I'm sure you would agree.
Yeah, it's been an honor and a privilege to be on your show, and I've been fascinated by some of the discoveries that you've disclosed. It's just mind blowing. Unfortunately, some of these things which you start to as we connect the dots, it's incredible to see just how far things have gone.
Well, now you know why I call them the Three Stooges. So I'm going to say goodnight to you. Thank you, and I look forward to our next chat here on Evident Footprints. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Our special guest, Dr. Richard Norton, MD, will be with us again, so be watching for that broadcast. Please visit my website, directlightproductions.com. Subscribe to the Idaho Observer if you haven't. There's going to be a lot of really earth-shattering information that's going to blow your mind about this media figure they've created for us. In the meantime, I'd like to thank my listening audience for being there, especially Bill and Linda for sending me the music of Tim Carr. You'll be hearing more of that in the future. Special thanks to Renee in California. I love you, Renee, and also the rest of my listening audience. Special thanks also to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and the wonderful sound tonight produced by our engineer, Mr. Seth Hendrick. In the meantime, join us tomorrow night for another show, and have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.